This is At Your Cervix, the podcast where pelvic health physiotherapists Emma Brockwell and Gráinne Donnelly talk to incredible guests who help lift the lid and bust the myths on all things pelvic health.
At Your Cervix, the podcast, season 4, is proud to be sponsored by Pelvic Relief. Founded by Eleanor Gardner, Pelvic Relief strives to offer quality products and information to help manage conditions such as pelvic pain, incontinence and painful sex. Informed by science and quality, they offer best-in-class products for pelvic health. Find out more by visiting www.pelvicrelief.co.uk and access 10% off using discount code ATYOURCERVIX10. Thank you for supporting At Your Cervix, the podcast.
Hi, I'm Helen, and Emma and Gráinne have very kindly let me sneak onto their podcast to tell you about mine. It's called Why Mums Don't Jump, and it's grown out of my own experience of pelvic organ prolapse. It's about pelvic floor problems after childbirth, prolapse, incontinence, pelvic pain, all the things that happen to so many women and that no one ever talks about. Join me to hear women's stories and expert voices as we try to bust some of the taboos around lumps and leaks. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts or online at whymumsdon'tjump.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to At Your Cervix, the podcast. Em and I are really delighted to have a very special guest today, Baz Moffitt. For anyone who doesn't know Baz Moffitt, she is a former GB rower who retired from sport to launch a successful international consulting and coaching business. She's a very prominent voice in the women's health movement, yay, suits her biases, and she specialises in pelvic floor. And I want to really start off by asking you a little bit about the Well, Baz, because you set up the Well. So tell us a little bit about what it is and why you set it up.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad I'm on this podcast. It's a great podcast, so thank you very much. The Well, we founded it a year ago, but it was kind of like we started thinking about the concept a couple of years ago, and we are, I suppose, on a mission to demedicalize women. So we feel that at the moment there's absolutely brilliant women's health experts, and we need them, but they're really the only people that have permission or even have any education about girls and women and everything that they will, you know, that they will experience. And we just don't think that's good enough. And we really want to see everybody be able to understand about females, girls, and women, and have the confidence to use that knowledge. And that's why we set up the Well, so that the people that need the likes of you get access to you. But there's a whole host of things that strength and conditioning coaches can do, PE teachers can do, parents on the sidelines of football, you know, Saturday football can do. And there's just no educational knowledge out there. So that's what we're attempting to do.
Amazing. Oh, my goodness. I was going to say that that's one of the things I've highlighted. I'm giving a talk later this week, and one of the biggest things is that we've had an information dissemination crisis. Like, we're not even getting bog standard basic public health messaging to people who need it. And so why are females just overlooked in this way for generations and generations?
And when we were creating the Well HQ, we were like, right, this is what we want to do. And then we just have a moment where we're like, surely someone has done this. This is like so obvious and so needed. How are we in 2021 when we launched and this hasn't been done yet? And we're like, you know, don't get me wrong, me and my co-founders are good at what we do, but we're not exceptional. We're like, surely someone has spotted that this is a really fundamental piece of the puzzle when it comes to creating sport, exercise, physical activity spaces where girls feel like they truly belong and will stay there.
Yeah. I mean, I think I need to apologize to everyone because I seem to have lost my voice, which is very unhelpful for the podcast. But we found that with our return to running postnatal guidelines, you know, we thought, this is so obvious, so simple, and no one's done it. And I wonder if that is just because we don't give women enough thought and consideration as we so desperately need to do. Tell me, for those of our listeners who maybe don't know about the Well HQ, who are your other co-founders?
Yeah, so my background's in sport, and then I went on to become personal training and into pelvic health from a personal training perspective, not a physio perspective. We have Bella Smith, who's an NHS GP, and she's been a GP for 20 years, like, you know, at the front, on the front line, so to speak. And then we have Dr. Emma Ross, who was the head of exercise, head of physiology at the English Institute of Sport for more or less 10 years. And so together we've got the coach, the scientist and the doctor, and we cover everything. So we cover from, we can cover the whole of a girl and woman's life and everything that she's going to experience. And we all have, like, you know, years and years of experience of working with hundreds of women in lots of different settings. And we understand coaches and we understand sports docs and we understand systems and we understand the ecosystem of sport and the practicalities of getting this information onto the ground. And you know, it doesn't, you can give a pelvic floor webinar and then someone will come up to you and say, yeah, so what do I do? And it's like, oh, like the specificity that people require for, like, they really need it in their situation, their sport, their role, their group. And that it's been a huge learning curve. Like we really naively thought, right, we'll have a menstrual cycle module and a breast health module and off we go. And people are like, yeah, I don't get it. I still don't get it. Thanks for that information. I've got no idea what to do with it. So we are now having to really work hard at kind of integrating this knowledge into, like, literally we are now giving people the sentences to use and then say, right, say this, they might say this. And then, and we're kind of like having to, like, really coach them around the conversations that they're going to be having. Yeah.
Yeah, because people aren't very good at applying to their own practices. It's kind of like the people, not that people like to be spoon-fed, but that's what they're used to being told exactly what to do within their role. And there's something about stepping out, like anything new makes people feel a little bit uncomfortable. So it's like totally a whole new area.
And this is brand new. And I think that we forget that, don't we? Because this is not taboo to us. We think this is normal.
Vaginas,
step,
say it all day, every day.
Yeah. Step 1 centimetre, literally 1 centimetre outside of our world. And this is a brand new concept. And I think that within sport, it's still hierarchical, isn't it? The people in charge of sport are in charge of sport because they know their sport. They know how to coach, like, rhythm. They know how to coach a pace. They know how to coach a chest pass. They know the technicalities. And then we're coming in with this female health staff, and many men are like they've not had a lived experience, they've never had a conversation about a menstrual cycle in their life, they wouldn't know, like, you know, they don't know what's in the toilets at their facilities. And it's like, oh no, like yeah, I don't know, it's kind of, we get two reactions. Thankfully, most of the reactions from the men in particular have been, oh, thank goodness you are now around, because I have wanted to learn for years about this stuff, but I never knew an appropriate way to learn it because it always made me feel a bit weird and uncomfortable. And we literally get emails like every week from 60-year-old men who've been coaching their sport for years, who are like, oh, you know, one came through last week that said, I'm the coach of an under 14s football team. I know that two of my girls have to have sports bras. I can see that. Their dads bring them to training. I'm a 50-year-old man. How do I have that conversation? Like, I get the knowledge. You can tell me which brand to go to, which website, but how do I actually, because if I tell a dad, he's going to think I've been looking at her breast. If I tell her, I actually haven't coached her for that long, I don't have that rapport. And that's the information they need. They don't need stats and postural analysis and like how to fit a bra. They don't need that. They need the actual first step.
I know what you mean, and it's such a grey area when it comes to pelvic health, particularly for the male coaches, because that's all of the fear. It's the fear of seeming inappropriate or being clunky with how they deliver stuff. And as you say, it's nearly giving them the actual phrases so they can start with that. Once they get a bit more comfortable, they'll be freer to kind of navigate situations themselves. And I guess that's probably one of my questions I wanted to ask you, was about what barriers do you find about, say, implementing some of this education or making tangible change with a new female-specific focus in sport and organisations. And I guess that's one of them. But is there any other barriers that you're finding?
I think a barrier is that there's no, I can't give them the playbook. I can't give them the rules, and I can't give them if we're working, you know, let's say we're working with a medical team, even a medical team, they have really strict return to play guidelines for concussion, for like lower back pain, for, you know, like hamstring injuries, like knee surgery, whatever. Like, it's really clear how to rehab your player back. But with this stuff, there isn't that. There isn't a playbook. And it's a kind of, and so we're putting them into a vulnerable place and saying, like, you've actually just got to talk to the athlete and you've got to work with them. And it's got to be individualized. And it, and you might not be the, you might not have all the answers. So I think that is, that for one, without a doubt, is really difficult for people. In this world, people feel that a lot of the topics, and quite rightly, are private and personal, and they don't want to be accused of being inappropriate. And I think that scares a lot of people. So even when we've been, you know, employed by a governing body to put on a coaching qualification, the coaches many times are like, right, I need to know that it's okay for me to have this conversation, Mr. Governing Body. Are you going to support me if I go out and have this? Because that concerns people, especially in this day and age. And I think that the other one, lastly, is that that we're less tolerant, I think, as a society across many topics. And it feels like you always have to master something before you can even be in that space. And we say, you're not going to get this right from the start. You're going to stumble over your words. You might use the wrong words. You might even give the wrong information. But we like to say that, well, we're all, you know, we need a bit of compassion in this space. Like, the athletes and the support systems need to be compassionate. You need to be compassionate and not just laugh and joke about and everybody. So I think that, there's a lot of barriers for everybody. So, and I suppose lastly, so for us, it's not just about creating a safe place for athletes to learn. It's also creating a safe place for the coaches and support teams to learn, where they can ask the silly questions and the questions that they don't want to ask in front of their teams and say, I'm really sorry, I'm really embarrassed to ask this, but can you just tell me again what I do if someone's on hormonal contraception, because I don't get it. And
people want that information. And I'm sure I've seen your, you know, posts where I think for one of your webinars, you had 3,000 people sign up. So the want for knowledge is very much there. And I think the more we have these conversations, that's partly why we set the podcast up, so that we're starting to break those taboos and normalize these conversations. And I think the Well has done an amazing job at doing that. And I'm really pleased that the reception you've had has been so massively positive, because it has been very positive, the reception you've received, hasn't it?
It has, but it's also it has been positive. We get criticized and we get told, we're attempting to educate people that are not qualified to do their jobs, if you know what I mean. So when they don't have sports science degrees, they don't have physio degrees, they're not medically trained. So we are like, they might have coaching qualifications, or they might just be volunteers, like umpires and things like that. So we're attempting to train these people. So often, and we have literally filtered through it. We've gone from the evidence base, and then we've kind of like filtered all the information down. So sometimes the information we present is fairly simple. Like, a lot of the times it's simple. When people will go, where's the evidence base? Can you tell me exactly what research paper you have taken this from? And it's like pulling almost doubt, you know, throwing doubt at what we're presenting. We get the first year was really, I feel the lights have gone on in 2022, thank goodness. But 2021, we literally had meeting after meeting with many people. I'll say people to be generous, with people with their arms folded going, oh, honestly, I think we're all right. Like, we're a really successful sport. Like, we've got this many medals or whatever. We're this successful in the world. Like, no one's ever talked to me about periods. I generally think we're all right. Like, and you're like, okay, like, you're not all right, but if that's what you think. Or, so there was that total denial that this was even a thing. Or there was like, okay, right, I kind of believe what you're saying. Can you come and talk about everything you know about girls and women in 1 hour? And if you do it for free, and if it's really popular, then we'll get you back in and we'll give you a couple of hundred quid to do it. And we're like, no, I'm really sorry, we can't. Like, that's not the deal. But luckily, we've had some absolutely pioneering sports, pioneering coaches, brilliant people that have like supported us and taken a risk. We're new. Like, we are new on the scene. and they've really invested in us, like their time and resources, and they've almost shown how big a job this is. It's like, you know, I'm thinking in particular with England netball, like this cannot be fixed in a webinar. And I think that many people thought that, like, oh, come and talk about the menopause. Right, tick, done that. What else can you talk about? Blah, yeah. And at the start, we had to do that because we had to stay alive as a business. We had to take whatever was going, and, you know, we've all done it. We go and do these talks all over the place. But then the likes of people like Sport England came along and England Netball came along and big brands came along and was like, this is going to take years, isn't it? And you have to work across the whole organization, don't you? And we're like, yeah. And we're like, this is the size of the project. And they're like, we're in. And almost by them coming on board and schools are doing the same, it's almost shining a light on the organizations that aren't. And you're like, you don't come to me anymore, like Mr. Great Big Governing Body, and tell me that you want me to do everything in 1 hour, because you know that's not possible.
It's about chipping away, and you've got to keep banging that drum. And sometimes, I mean, Gronja and I have experienced it considerably. You give so much for free because you're so passionate, but it does sometimes gets you down, because you think, I know what we've got here is good. I know what we've got to say is so important. Why aren't you getting that? But all of a sudden, it just takes one little seed to sprout and look at how 2022 is going for you. And that's what I'm quite keen to hear more about, is what the work you're doing in schools, because this is one of my little passion, not projects, but what something I'm really passionate about, probably because my daughter and my stepdaughter are getting older. Desperately want to see more girls playing sport. I desperately want to see more women's health issues discussed in school. I mean, tell us, first of all, perhaps, what crisis are we facing in schools with girls and exercise? Are enough girls exercising? And if not, why not?
No, it's a crisis. And I think the figures vary, but it's between 60-70% of girls will drop out of all sport by the end of puberty, which is just outrageous. Awful. So, and there's also an eating crisis as well, like, you know, in terms of their relationships with food. And I think for, you know, you've got the co-ed schools and the girls' schools. And I think in the co-ed schools, the girls have fitted into the male model. So the male model of taking the first 15 rugby team off, et cetera. The men's boys' teams seem to be set up really well, and the girls have kind of fitted into that. But often in the girls' schools as well, like there's only 5 directors of sport that are female in this country in the independent sector. And you think, well, so off, you know, we might be dealing with a director of sport that's a man in his mid-30s that's had one lesson on how not to get a girl pregnant when he was at school in year 8. And he could have been at an all-boys school, gone to PE, gone to university, gone to PE college. That is the only piece of education he's had, and he's now running girls' sport. And he might really want to know, but our massive problem is that there is no default education around what girls are going through during puberty. So there's a real, and they all, it's the year 10 girls seem to be the crisis age, that year, like end of year 9, going into year 10, where most of them will have started their periods, most of them will, you know, need bras, and they're like, just, they just dropping out in droves of sport. And it's like, what can we do to keep them in sport? And it's, they're really worried. And I think that we go in, at the moment we're just going into the independent schools because, you know, there isn't a budget anywhere to pay for this. So our plan is that we get really established in the independent sector, and then, you know, in a year's time, we're really hoping to, we're working towards getting sponsorship for the program to kind of, so it can land. Because it's absolutely not right that what we do is only accessible to the people that can afford it. But when you're disrupting any place, you have to prove the concept, and that's what we're doing right now. And thankfully, many of these schools that we're working with have a really committed to their local communities. And so they always include the local state schools, the local sports teams. So they come in, they come to our events as well. So they're hosted. And so that this little kind of like ecosystem is, you know, is well supported.
Are you finding that girls who hear you are then going back into sport? Or
I think what's, the day is the day, we often do a session with the parents and the coaches the night before to tell them what we're going to be discussing the next day, and then we'll spend day in the school with the girls. Sometimes school just wants us to talk with the sports scholars and the sports teams, and other times it's like with just a specific year group or across the whole school. They've never had anybody talk to them about their bodies like we do. So they've had the biology. Often anything around women or female health is a part of PSHE, and often that's PSHE isn't a quad, no one's a PSHE teacher. Like, everyone's like a classics teacher or a geography teacher and does a bit of PSHE. So they're kind of given the curriculum and given like what to say, but they won't have necessarily a passion for it that's not their gig.
Okay, so is that like pastoral care type stuff or what?
Yeah, it's social health education. Okay. Yeah. So we stand there and we say, your bodies are amazing. Like, your bodies are amazing. And on every day of the month, there is nothing holding you back. And they're like, what? Like, are you sure? Like, how is that true? We're like, and so we do this whole thing around, you know, we put up all the athletes that have not performed like on the day of their Olympic training or like the Wimbledon final or whatever it might be. And we say, like, all these women did not have sort of like control of their body. They didn't understand their cycles or, you know, whatever, like their breasts were kind of got in the way, but we're saying that's not okay. Like, there are things that can be done about this. And we throw around the period pants and the period swimming costumes and I teach them all how to do their pelvic floor exercises, and it's absolute chaos, but I don't let them leave the room until I've got utter silence and they've all got it. And I'm like, you're not going to lunch until you've nailed this. And we talk about sports bras. They're all upset. They're all the questions that come out. They're like, well, like, they just want, how do I know how big I will get? Or like, why is one of my breasts bigger than the other? And like, why is her breast bigger and mine is smaller? And we talk about hormonal contraception with like the year nines upwards. Whatever topic we don't have time to fit in is a topic we always get loads and loads of questions on. But hormonal contraception comes up a lot because many of the girls and the teachers are saying they're all taking it because they don't want their periods. They're not taking it for contraceptive reasons. Some of them will be taking it to manage like for problematic periods, and that's okay. But many are just like, oh, it's just easier not to. So we say, well, that's okay. Like, this is the effect of the hormonal contraception on you. You just need to know this, because actually your menstrual cycle is amazing. And if you can manage those symptoms a bit better, you'll get all the benefits. And people just don't have resilience when it comes to sorting out the women's, like the menstrual cycle issues. They just try one thing, and if it doesn't work, they're like done. And they just, they either suffer in silence or they just, you know, they'll just look for an easy option.
You say, like, you've mentioned menstrual cycle and that issue, and a little bit about breasts. I presume the main barriers for women and why they're dropping off, so for anyone who's not familiar about this crisis, are the reasons of the menstrual cycle issues, breast health issues, what, anything else? Are some of them leaking at all, or is there anybody disclosing any other barriers?
Yeah, so I pelvic health is not a quite, it's not, no one, no schools are phoning me up and saying, Baz, will you come in and talk about pelvic health? What happens is we do a stay on female, we call it sport in her shoes, and they just get help. I just, like, we are covering this. Like, this is part of the gig. So, like, in my heart, there's no way I would be able to set up a business that work with education. They're kind of not ready. But once I'm there and I'm talking about it, suddenly all the teachers come in, because all the PE teachers have to get back to coaching netball and coaching hockey within a year, and they all come in. All the perimenopausal teachers come in. And so I have, at the end of my talk, I have a line of teachers and I have a line of girls all wanting to talk to me. And I'm like this, and they're like, oh, thank you so much for teaching me that. Like, blah, blah, blah. You know what people are like, oversharing straight away. And the girls are like, oh, I wet myself at the end of every race, and I just thought that was okay. But now you've told me that it's not, and I kind of understand why now. And some questions about bed wetting, questions about, I do... For girls, I do mainly like what's normal. So I kind of go through the what's normal for bladders, what's normal for bowels, how to do a poo, like, I do a quiz. I try and make it really fun and accessible, and then I'll teach them their exercises at the end. But I just say, look, I know that if you're doing high impact sport, like, many of you will be wetting yourself, and just by saying it like that, they go, oh, she knows. She knows.
Yeah, you're normalizing it. Or like, it's okay for me to say. Yeah.
That's so empowering. I'd love that sort of discussion, you know, when I was at school. Do you have any hit back from the parents or any safeguarding issues to consider with all these types of educational techniques?
No, I don't think so. But interestingly, we were at a university the other week doing a similar kind of gig, and there was a local athletics team that came along with the coaches, and they said, and we were talking about Red S, and they said, we get this. If we go to our parents and tell them that their girls need to have a menstrual cycle and that they need to be eating more, they will kick back because they want their girls to be successful at sport. And they have a very fixed mindset as to like what a cross-country runner should look like, what weight, shape and size she should be. And it literally kicks you in the gut.
I'm just like, oh
my God. And so you're like, so I think, again, we have so many layers of knowledge, don't we? Like any professional has so many layers that if anyone challenges us or pushes back, we have an answer or we have a workaround or we have a different way of presenting that information. When you've just learned information, you kind of only have one layer and maybe two maximum. And that's where I feel like, you know, people struggle, like PE teachers or coaches will struggle because they're like, oh, she's pushed back. And I don't have an answer for that. I don't have that answer. We've not had any challenges on us being in the safeguarding because we do, we are so clear in our communications. Like we have like a 3-month run in to any event. So everyone is fully briefed. We always work with the heads of departments. We work with their wellbeing teams. We work with everybody. We communicate with the parents. We have brochures when we go so they can, the children can take those home. And every talk we've done has got like, they're really like beautifully presented. And so the parents can see what we've talked about. And to be quite honest, I think the parents are relieved. They're like, oh, like, I wish somebody had talked to me about this. And they can probably, like, I think that, yeah, they all want their girls to be fit, healthy and well. And they're like, anything that's going to help support that. And in fact, the school we're going to in a few weeks' time, the parents have said, just tell us how much money you want us to put into the pot because we want to make sure this continues. And we want to kind of almost invest in our girls' health at this school and also the girls in the local community. So I think parents, we've kind of always been welcomed with open arms. I think that that next level of like where the show, if you like, we go in and do the show. It's like we then need to support the people, the teachers and the coaches to be able to to carry on the work that we're doing.
Do you know what's like the tide will change? And I know it takes a while for like research to catch into clinical practice, but even things, because the thing you shared as well, the NICE guidance was recently updated on bone health for people who are missing periods or haven't changed in their periods. And stuff like that there has to be actioned, and there will be more research coming out next year on the link between Red S or relative energy deficiency in sport and pelvic health conditions. So once that comes out, that's going to bring in the pelvic health element and hammer it home a little bit more. So there is exciting, I suppose, waves, and all the efforts that everyone's putting in will hopefully start to come to fruition. But what's really, really bizarre to me when we think of it, if anyone is in the sports medicine world and they think very sports medicine minded, so your coaches and your people who know their sport and their expertise, why, when marginal gains are such, could be the difference between winning and losing, why are they not being like, well, this could actually be the thing that's actually stopping her slowing her down a wee bit or stopping her from performing? Because, you know, anyone knows, if anyone's ever experienced the sensation of either having a fear of going to leak or actually leaking, you know, it stops you. Your instinct, your body just naturally stops you down a little bit. So from that point of view, even from a strength and conditioner or an athlete performance perspective, that should be an easy buy-in. Like, oh, this will help the performance, I'm in. But it's just baffled me that I know that we've talked about the difficulties in terms of particularly male coaches, and maybe it's a bit taboo and a bit inappropriate, or they're afraid of that grey area. But you would really think in this day and age, especially with really key athletes coming forward, like Mary Kane and different people who really demonstrated like how their career ended because they weren't managed properly, how are we still having to convince people?
So our theory is that until this becomes legal, like actually nothing's going to happen. And our prediction is that in the next couple of years, an athlete like Mary Kane is going to sue her coach, her governing body, because she's on HRT in her 20s, because she was forced to be a certain weight, shape, size and do a whatever amount of training, which we know, which the evidence base is now there to say that's not okay. So until when we do like big conferences, when we do the keynote speeches, you can see the penny dropping, especially with the policy and the legal teams. And they're like, they put their hands up like, so this is duty of care. What you're describing is duty of care. And as soon as people get their head around the fact that it's duty of care, things will start to change. So when I, you know, we're kind of the gladiator generation, like, you know, we're in our 40s, we kind of like, we grew up on the gladiators. Many of that generation of women, like covered in lycra, wouldn't have had their menstrual cycles. And they're now in their 50s with osteoporosis, way, way earlier than they should do. But we didn't know back then. We didn't know that the menstrual cycle was a vital sign of health and the impact it had on our bones. But we know now. We know enough now. And the system just does need to catch up with that. But you're absolutely right that we spend millions on innovation on how to make wheels rounder and the marginal gains. And I was in the system a long time ago. So I was in the system kind of like, you know, 15, 20 years ago in the elite system. And I had girls being sick over the side of the boat every month. We had, you know, like people had back pain correlated with their cycle, like loads, but that was we just never, ever, ever talked about. And I think because it's seen as a weakness. Seen as a weakness. And I think that when I was an athlete, they wanted my tenacity, they wanted my teamwork, they wanted my commitment, they wanted my ability to stay in that pain zone and not complain. But anything that was seen as like a vulnerability, and also, you know, I was trying to hold on to my spot. Like I wasn't a top performing member of the British rowing team. I was like hanging on the edges. So I wouldn't mind telling them my back was a bit stiff because I knew they could sort that out. But I was never, ever going to mention anything. Never. Why would I do that? Because that would just give them a reason not to select me. And I think that having, you know, we talk with athletes all the time, that's still very much the case. And I think that within a squad system, the people really high up, if they're not talking about it and having the confidence to share this, then there's no way the people, you know, the youngsters or the people new into the teams will be.
You're right, because it's such a competitive environment in terms of even just getting your place to then compete. So before you compete, there's the competition to get selected. And it exists, like we see this too, in that now that new generation of perinatal athletes, now athletes continuing into performance career, enter motherhood, but there's all those issues that have been brought to the forefront, but are still issues with, you know, needing to get back to that athletic identity, sponsorship pressures, not getting maternity pay, not getting that entitlement to postpartum recovery, not being able to hit pause. And so every stage of a woman's transition, because we've started off by talking about puberty and that transition and how women drop off, then you think of them entering motherhood and then them thinking of entering perimenopause, and every stage there's barriers.
Yeah. And I think that if I take a step back and look at kind of what's happened, that when women entered sport, which is relatively new, like we kind of assume that this has like been going on forever. It hasn't. Like women enter sport relatively recently. We have just had to be grateful for everything. So we have had to be grateful. Oh, women can now be part of our club. Oh, women can now have a coach. Oh, women can now have a kit budget. Oh, look, we've got a sponsorship for the kit. It's not the same as the men, but we've got a sponsorship. Okay, now we've got similar amounts of funding. Oh, you can get a sports bra. No, that's a sports bra that you're wearing. You've got a sports bra. So, but we just have to say thank you. Oh, brilliant. Thank you very much. But now we have to stop saying thank you. We just have to say, you know what? It's shit. Like I was at a conference talking about pre and postnatal the other week, and there were a couple of governing bodies there saying, oh yeah, we've got this new pre and postnatal policy. And like, it's still really bad though. Well done. Like, I've got no doubt that was really hard for you to get 8 weeks of full pay for your players, but you're on the sofa crying because you can't feed your baby at 8 weeks postnatal, not ready to make a decision about your return to play. So let's just call it. Let's say it's rubbish. It's not, that's not enough. And, you know, when like there's some sports that you can hold on to your world ranking, can't you, for something like 6 months, like postnatally, or 12 months in total. Like, that's not enough. How is that enough? That is not, we all know that's not enough. So let's not say thank you. Let's say that's not enough. Like, and I think that, and those examples are just really classic examples of how we've tried to fit in women's rules into a men's system, or a system not designed for us. Whereas actually we just need to recreate the system. We need to stop trying to fit women into a system that's not designed for us and say, right. And I know that's trying to create a utopia, but I think we've just got to think big. You've got to be think big and think massive, because the way it's working at the moment in terms of like, what can we get away with? Like, or what can we get within this existing system? We just end up with stuff that's not helpful. And it's going to take ages, isn't it? It's going to take too long. And we haven't got, we've got too much to do to be working at this slow pace.
Yeah, I agree. It does feel like it's a slow, slow process. That just doesn't seem right at all. I mean, do you think there's any positives? If we think back to when you were an elite athlete, do you think any positives have happened since, you know, you had your heyday? Are you hearing any good stuff?
We're talking about it, aren't we?
Oh, yes,
that's helpful. Again, you know, there's absolutely brilliant examples, and you know, you worked with England netball, like in their return to, you know, but they still don't have a return to play guidelines like you've put in those running ones. It wouldn't be that hard, would it? It generally wouldn't be that hard for every sport to take your guidelines and adapt them to their own sports. How amazing would that be? And I think that's no criticism at all of like England netball, because no one's done it yet. But they, I think we're talking about it. There is a real, there are some, we're getting closer and closer to women within the sport talking about it. So there are plenty of recently retired athletes and people that have, like, you know, retired a long time and don't care what people think about them. Like, they're talking. So if you think about Tokyo, how amazing was it to see, you know, like the athletes there? They're not talking about women's health necessarily, but they're talking about mental health. They're talking about their vulnerabilities. And I thought that was a massive shift from Rio. Like, nothing happened. There was no chat at Rio. And yet 5 years later, all the stories were about the girls and the women, weren't they? All the great media stories were about the girls and women. So without a doubt, the profile is improving. But we work with some of the big sponsors of the international women's teams, and they, you know, they often say, "Well, we're going to talk about taboo. We're going to talk about taboo topic." You say, "Great, let's talk about pelvic health." We're like, "Oh, not that one." Okay, oh, so God. We can talk about some taboos, but not this taboo. And
why? Because it's not trendy enough, or like, are they afraid it affecting their brand?
Because I spent like 5-6 years doing pelvic floor, so I obviously thought everyone was obsessed by it. And then I stepped out into the world, then they're just not ready. They're not, you know what? We get invited a lot to talk about menstrual cycles, right? Like, people are ready to talk about that, and breasts to a certain extent. I think that my theory, don't know what you think, but is that we're supposed to have a menstrual cycle. So like, you get it, like you're supposed to have a menstrual cycle. So therefore it's okay to learn about it. We're not supposed to leak. Our pelvic floor is supposed to work. It's not supposed to leak. So I think that's why it's a taboo, because we're talking about a dysfunction as opposed to talking about, you know, something in our bodies that's supposed to be happening. But it's really people are just like, elite sports come to us, like they come to us and want us to help them with it. But if we say, can we talk about this? Can we use you as a case study? Can we, like, you know, I've got I'm working on it with an article that, I'm working with a journalist and an article specifically about this. And like, no, we can't have our athletes connected with that. Like, okay.
Mad though, because like, you only have to look back a couple of decades ago to when you couldn't say breast, and the word breast was a taboo issue. Like, female, anything about female bodies, you don't discuss these female sex organs at all. But because of things like breastfeeding campaigns and breast cancer campaigns, public health messages that had to get out there, and it's hitting you time and time again. Now you say breast, no one raises an eyelid. Yes. And, you know, so I think the same thing has to happen. There just needs to be a big public health message that hits everyone, no matter where you look. There's a big billboard about pelvic health. Now, which brand was it who recently did a nice billboard where they actually had water trickling down? It was quite it got people talking. That was a good. It was some brand to do with continence products.
I thought that was,
but they did like a,
It was very clever.
It was interactive. It made people stop and look. And there needs to be more of that where you see it and it's not kind of like, oh gosh, we don't look over there. Like it's a case of in your face. We see this all the time. Well, this is something that happens. So we need to essentially normalize it because like it can be done in the same way as breasts happen.
Yeah, it can. And Emma, going back to your, I am racking my brains with positives. What is changed? The athletes are ready. Athletes are ready to talk and they are, you need to work. If you've got a squad, like a football squad in front of you, might take a bit of warming up, but with a few little, you know, warm up ice breaking exercises, you can get them talking and they are ready. And I think that is a big shift. I almost like the system has to catch up with where the athletes are at, because the athletes really, really want to know. And I think that's a change. Yeah.
I totally agree, and I do definitely think I've done some work with netball, particularly Bath netball team, and they are definitely interested. The Netball Players Association, they get it, and it's that trickle effect. And I think, you know, I think I'm starting to see it in football now. And you know, we work with we've done some work with Roz Cook, who's a musculoskeletal physio, but she has an interest in pelvic health as well. And I'm probably going to get this wrong, so sorry, Roz, but I think she's the physio for the England hockey team. I'm sure I've got that wrong. But, you know, there's the more of us that are getting this message out there, it will get there. It will. It's just we want it to happen now because we see how important it is.
But what we're doing is we're relying on a female physio often. So, you know, we've just done a big research project with football and other teams, and often it's like, oh yeah, when we had the female physio, she asked me about my menstrual cycle, but now she's gone. And it's like when it's not that the system isn't sorted, it's just reliant on brilliant people coming in and exploring it. And that's pot luck, isn't it? And that's not good enough.
It is. I think the other thing as well, though, is the lack of research. You know, I do think, particularly in the pregnancy and postnatal world, if we don't have the evidence to show and support elite athletes that they can, you know, explore their limits when they're pregnant and exercising, they're basing all of their training on guidelines that are based around, and they're very good guidelines, that are based for more of the layman, you know, the average exerciser. And these women need more than just the basics. And so, you know, the research world needs to catch up as well. But they are a particularly difficult population to do research around because of the ethics around it. So it seems that everywhere you turn, there's a blooming barrier that you hit. Yeah.
But it is, you know, we were presenting to a sport and exercise science students, and they came up and said, we say that when we were at university studying, you just didn't study women because it was just too expensive. Like literally your tutors were like, nah, just study the blokes. It's just easier. It's like, we haven't got the money to study. Like, and you're like, oh, okay then. And you never challenged it. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. We'll just apply that to everybody else. But now this next generation of sports scientists are coming through and they're listening to us and they're listening to everything else that's going out. And they're like, no, I'm going to study women. And they're sharing these stories with us. And they're just so, and I know that they're only, you know, BSc students and MSc students, and it's going to take years. But that's why I feel in this space, and I don't know what you have both felt, that I feel it's a lot more collaborative than competitive. And don't get me wrong, I get that there's like totally competition between people, but we have to collaborate because we have to catch up, don't we? We cannot wait the classic 17 years or however long it is for academic research to get into practice. We have to close that gap. So we just have to speed up and we have to work together. And that's why I've never seen it before, but like, you know, rowing's my sport, but rowing clubs will group together and host us and put an event on. They wouldn't normally do that. They'd normally just, they'd all have their own individual masterclasses or whatever for their own gain. But I think, I don't know if it's because it's women who tend to come to us and women who want to do it, and it's just a bit more but I do feel there is a lot more collaboration when it comes to this space, which is really, and people are genuinely trying to make the world a better place. They're like, I don't want to experience what, or I don't want everyone in my care to experience what I did. I know what held me back. I'm trying to make I want to improve this. And it's not because, ultimately, yes, I might have a better sports team at the end of it, but it's bigger. People are going bigger than that, which is just brilliant. That's really refreshing.
It's also because it's what you said, it's bigger than what the sport or the competition or the organization is. It's quality of life. It's future proofing females and their longevity to be able to engage in physical activity. And that's a massive thing. And I think everybody wants that for people. And I think anyone who works in this field does it out of a passion. It's not like, you know, you don't go specialize in this field because you want to earn a bob. You specialize in this field because you see something that needs to be improved upon. And so there's that passion that drives you. And that creates more collaborative multidisciplinary teams and things too, and organizations, which is really exciting.
I totally agree with all of that, Gráinne. And I think, you know, we've had quite a, you know, a collaborative journey when we got together. And we definitely see that collaboration is there. There is competition there. It'd be nice to get rid of that a little bit. But, you know, there is collaboration and women do want to work with each other. And I definitely see that men are more and more excited about getting involved in women's health. So that's fabulous.
And we have to bring them with us, like, especially in our world, because we are saying we're demedicalizing all of this. So like, there's absolutely no reason why coach level one, coach level two, strength and conditioning coach can handle this content at whatever level you're at. And we run these sort of free webinars regularly, like 3-4 times a year, and we've been getting hardly any men show up. Like, no men have been coming, like, kind of, I don't know, 5-10%. We then put in brackets 4 men at the end of the one we ran in January, and we had 600 men rock up.
Oh my God.
And it was like, and they're like, oh my goodness, thank you so much for putting this on, this is amazing. And they were kind of from all over the world. They were all different levels. We had circus performers, we had under 14 dads of under 14 rugby players, we had researchers, PhD students, sports docs, everything. And I'm like, you could have come to everything else. Like, it was just that we had to put 4 men. But you have to once they're there, they love it. And they, you know, then I got all these messages at the end saying, right, I'm off to find up my, you know, the right sports bra for my daughter now and my wife, because I've got puberty and perimenopause going on at the same time, and we need to sort this out. And they got really excited. And I think that, you know, there are so, most of the sports coaches, most girls will be coached by men and taught by men. So we have to, I think that it's very easy to get very feminist and angry, like we have, like, oh, you know, during this podcast. But also, we just need to say, okay, we're not here to shock. We're not here to show off about what we know and you don't. We actually need to bring everyone with us.
Yeah, I love that. What are the next plans for the Well HQ then? What have you got next on your hit list?
So we're working on creating a standard for girls and women, which is phenomenal. So like, we want to create this standard, so therefore qualifications can be accredited. So there's a governing body in the UK called SIMSPA, which have all the so if you do any fitness qualification, any PT, any coaching qualification, it will be accredited by this body. And we are working with them to do to create this girls and women standards, so that we don't want to have they don't exist anyway, but we don't want to go down the route of having special girls and women's qualifications. We want it to be integrated across the board. So that's a huge thing. We've got a book coming out that's going on pre-sale in a couple of weeks, and that's coming out in February of 2023. That's when it actually be published, but it's on pre-sale, which is going to be amazing, in June. And then netball is like the really big project. We're just kind of be rolling that out this year, and really we're working with a group, the pilot group at the moment, and it's really key to us that we're not just creating female health from a white heterosexual middle class perspective, which is actually the default, because that's what most people are who work in this space right now. And so we've been working really closely with netball to make sure that the people on the pilot are from real diverse mix of backgrounds, and that we take on their, you know, their cultural experiences, their social economic groups, so that when we're talking about sports bra, it's like, it lands. It's like, okay, like, that's how much money you've got. You don't have any, this is where you shop. This is what you have available to you. This is what's showing up for you on a netball court. And so that's a really good project. So that's going to take up a lot of time this year.
With all the work that you have done over the past, because it's been longer than a year, it's been a few years that you guys have been working together, what would you offer our listeners, if you like, as 3 tips perhaps that you've really feel, you know, can help someone listening, be it whether they're a woman who just has an interest in our podcast, or someone that works with women? Put you on the spot.
Okay. I think providing court shortcuts is the ninja way of creating a space in a heartbeat where girls and women feel like they are welcome. So making sure that there are free tampons and sanitary towels available to everybody. And you just go rogue on it. You don't have to ask permission. You don't have to kind of get complicated and get policies. You just literally need to raid your cupboard, your bathroom cupboard at home and your mates and get a pile. Just needs to be really DIY. So, and have a conversation and tell everyone that that's there. I would say practice talking about this. So if you're like, I've just done lots of work with menopause and I'm like, talk to somebody that you know is gonna not, isn't gonna judge you. And it's gonna be a really nice, easy conversation. So start easy, whatever that might be, whether it's about sports bras, menstrual cycle, menopause. Say, oh, like, have you had your menopause yet? Like, what was it like? Just start a conversation about a lot and then stretch yourself. I say, then just stretch yourself a little bit, then go and try and find someone that you think might not kind of like have that, you know, have that response. So court shortcuts. Talk, because I think the more we talk, the more we those words don't shock us and we don't trip up over them. And then the third thing is, I think, is just start to like apply the female filter. So just start to, you don't have to have the solutions, but just walk into your space and say, where are the men training? Where are the girls training? What images do I have on the wall? What kit do the women wear? Is it extra small? Is it unisex? So it's just basically small men's kit. Is it white? Like, just start looking at the spaces and just asking questions. You don't have to have the solutions, but just start asking questions and be inquisitive and be interested. Those are my three.
That's a fantastic three to finish on and a really, really useful set of tips for our listeners. We're delighted to have had you on today. Thanks so much for spending your time. And we'll pop details for where people can contact you and how they can find the well and things into the show notes. But thank you so much. And we look forward to see what you do next.
Brilliant. Thank you
thank
for
you
having
so
me.
Thank you so much, Bess.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode. We really hope you enjoyed it. We always love to hear your feedback and any questions you might have. So please do contact us via Instagram at @yourcervix_thepodcast or Twitter at @yourcervix_PM. And don't forget to check out our wonderful sponsor, Pelvic Relief. You can find them at www.pelvicrelief.co.uk. Gráinne and I really look forward to catching up with you next week.